It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
The World Health Organization approves use of anti-Ebola experimental drugs. The UN chief urges West Africans to avoid fear and panic over Ebola. I'm Victor Beatty reporting from Washington. The World Health Organization on Tuesday approved use of experimental drugs not yet tested in humans to be used in the fight of West Africa's growing Ebola outbreak. The decision follows the latest WHO death toll of more than 1,000 victims. More now from reporter Lisa Schlein in Geneva.
WHO Assistant Director General Marie-Paul Kini says the panel of experts who convened Monday unanimously agreed that it is ethical to offer unproven medicines as potential treatments.
The magnitude and the spread of the outbreak makes it that we don't have enough people to use and to rely only, if I may say, on what has traditionally worked if we want to stop the outbreak as quickly as possible.
While the WHO is given the go-ahead for the use of untested treatments and vaccines, Dr. Kini says certain ethical criteria must guide their use. These include transparency of care, informed consent, freedom of choice, confidentiality, and community involvement. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma Tuesday expressed utter dismay at the slow international response to the spread of the Ebola virus. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon Tuesday urged the international community to respond to the needs of African countries whose healthcare systems are overwhelmed by the effects of the outbreak.
I urge the international community to respond urgently to the shortage of doctors, nurses, and equipment, including protective clothing and isolation tents. We need all hands on deck. Second, coordinated international response is essential. I remain in close touch with Dr. Margaret Chan, Director General of WHO. In the days ahead, the UN system will further strengthen the way we are dealing with the outbreak.
Mr. Ban called on the international community to avoid panic and fear, saying the Ebola virus can be prevented. Nigeria's President Goodluck Jonathan announced he's meeting with state governors today to ensure proper preparations to combat Ebola.
We are doing our best. On Wednesday, I'm going to meet with all the governors of the states. They will come with their commissioners in charge of health, and we must make sure that every state is prepared where they lack. Federal government will support the state to make sure that they have what it takes to contain the Ebola. It's unfortunate that one madman brought the Ebola to us, but we have to contain it.
Tuesday, Spain said a Roman Catholic priest, Miguel Pajares, who contracted Ebola while serving in Liberia, died of the illness after being returned to Madrid. Elsewhere, Guinea-Bissau closed its border with Guinea, one of the affected countries. Guinea, meanwhile, says it has been told by the Confederation of African Football to move a qualifying match for the 2015 African Cup against Togo, scheduled next month, to another venue outside the country. Sierra Leone announced it's canceling all football matches. It's requested some being played in Ghana. The United States says it will give South Sudan about $180 million in emergency food aid to help avert famine. National Security Advisor Susan Rice announced the funding Tuesday, saying that South Sudan faces the worst food security situation in the world. Fighting between supporters of President Salva Kiir and his former deputy Riek Machar has uprooted more than 1.5 million South Sudanese from their homes since mid-December. Meanwhile, Tuesday, a UN Security Council delegation met President Kiir in the capital, Juba. U.S. UN Ambassador Samantha Power said afterward there is no military solution to the situation.
This Security Council visit comes in a way as an emergency visit to this country to underscore to the leadership here just how important it is to follow through on the commitments made, to put together a transitional governing body in the run-up to elections.
She said the council is prepared to impose sanctions on those who undermine peace efforts and commit human rights violations. South Africa's Environment Ministry has announced plans to relocate hundreds of rhinos from Kruger National Park to try to stop poaching. The decision announced Tuesday marks the first mass removal of rhinos from the park since 1997. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Peter Clotter in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 13, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's president will use the military to ensure next year's polls are free and fair.
The soldiers do not conduct elections. Their job is just to prevent the breakdown of law and order, and their presence is merely complementary to the efforts of the police and other security agencies who are traditionally in charge of security.
That's President Goodluck Jonathan's spokesman, Rubin Abati. South Africa grants a three-year permit to over 200,000 Zimbabweans. Uganda sent 20 experts to aid in the Ebola crisis.
If you look at the outbreaks that we have in Uganda in the last couple of years, we have been able to manage it as early as possible, actually, without even spread to neighboring countries.
That's Dr. Solomon Fiseha, who is working with the World Health Organization in Uganda. And an environmental expert said South Sudanese leaders should focus on investing in the nation's water resources instead of fighting. All that in Marco Umeh Sports, coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan stands by his commitment to deploy security forces across the country for the protection of voters and to ensure free and transparent elections next year, according to presidential spokesman Rubin Abati. Speaking at an interfaith conference on Monday, attended by both Muslims and Christians, President Jonathan expressed concern about doomsday preachers predicting chaos and violence in the run-up to next year's general election. Abati told me earlier that Jonathan has vowed not to allow anyone plotting to disrupt the polls to succeed, regardless of their political affiliation.
President Jonathan was speaking at an interfaith conference attended by both Christians and Muslims, and he pointed out that he, as president, under his watch, will never stand by and allow anybody threatening to disintegrate the country to succeed. And that, you know, during elections, the whole idea of ensuring full security is to make sure that there is no breakdown of law and order, and that he was promising both Nigerians and the international community that the elections next year will also be free and fair, peaceful, transparent, and, you know, credible. And that, you know, security measures taken have succeeded in ensuring peace and stability during all the various electoral processes that have been conducted under his watch.
There are concerns expressed by some Labour officials as well as opposition leaders that the deployment of military or security officials to these polling centres are, one, intimidating, and two, could potentially prevent people from voting. And they express concern about it. What is your take about that?
That is not true, because the presence of the military during elections has not intimidated anybody. And the president made this clear. The soldiers have not been used to intimidate anybody. The soldiers do not conduct elections. Their job is just to prevent the breakdown of law and order. And their presence is merely complementary to the efforts of the police and other security agencies who are traditionally in charge of security. And, you know, the effectiveness of this approach is measurable. President Jonathan's administration has conducted elections in various states of the Federation, and some of those elections have also been lost by the ruling party. And he made this very clear yesterday.
So what do you say to his critics who say that his coming out to say that the elections will be free and fair is a ploy to unleash security officials and intimidate them, as well as jail some of these opposition leaders who are his opponents in the run-up to next year's election, and that the president is trying to do everything he can to win next year's vote?
The last election is anything to go by. President Jonathan has received fulsome praise from all categories of Nigerians, including those who complain about heavy security. You know, he has received praise for his commitment to free and fair and credible elections in Ekiti. The recent gubernatorial election in Ekiti, which the APC lost to the PDP. Yes, the APC complained about heavy security presence, but the last gubernatorial elections in Osun, which the APC won convincingly, even with a heavy security presence, they have not complained about security. So what you find here is, you know, when it serves their purpose, oh, they say, oh, this is very good. When it doesn't, the result doesn't go their way, they complain.
Rubin Abati is Nigeria's presidential spokesman. He spoke with me earlier from the capital, Abuja. Uganda, which has a history of containing Ebola outbreaks, has sent 20 of its experts to Sierra Leone and Liberia to help curb the spread of the disease. The current Ebola outbreak in West Africa is the largest ever. Late Monday, the World Health Organization, WHO, said there have been at least 1,013 deaths. Elizabeth Paula has the details for VOA from Kampala, Uganda.
West Africa has a new partner in the fight against the Ebola outbreak. Uganda's Ministry of Health, in coordination with the WHO, has sent 20 of Uganda's top health experts to West Africa. Their specializations include epidemiology, case management, community education, and psychosocial support. They flew to Sierra Leone and Liberia late last month to assist the overburdened governments in containing the disease. Uganda has experience fighting Ebola with four major outbreaks in the last 10 years, all of which were contained. During the last Uganda outbreak in 2012, public health initiatives, including recommendations by President Yoweri Museveni and the Ministry of Health, targeted social interactions. Warnings were sent out daily, reminding people to avoid shaking hands, kissing, and engaging in burial rituals that included touching the body. Diagnostic testing was also improved to more efficiently identify Ebola patients, while training for health workers and protective gear was supplied. The WHO is hoping Uganda's experts can bring a similar approach to the current outbreak in West Africa. Dr. Solomon Fiseha, who is working on the project with the WHO in Uganda, explains Uganda's previous successes.
Uganda has got a very good experience on this management of viral hemorrhagic fevers. For example, in 2012, we have almost four outbreaks of viral hemorrhagic fevers in four districts, Ebola and Marburg. Since then, the country has developed a good capacity. So if you look at the outbreaks that we have in Uganda in the last couple of years, we have been able to manage it as early as possible, actually, without even spread to neighboring countries.
This Ebola outbreak has led to multiple border closures, while airline companies have also suspended or restricted flights to the West Africa region. At the WHO, there is hope that a multifaceted approach will work. Dr. Fiseha describes the approach.
If you have the surveillance system in place, and if you have the experts on the ground, and if you create the environment, a favorable environment within the community, so that the community understands the risk, and rather than trying to hide, will come out and inform the health workers, health professionals, so that appropriate measure will be taken. Because it's very difficult to identify the patients unless they come and report to you. So what makes the control very difficult, especially now in West Africa, is this happens for the first time, and it is in a very rural, remote area. And you can really understand the panic that it can create in the community, and people will be are likely to be resistant, so it will take you some time to convince the community and bring them on board.
The United States is also sending specialists from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the U.S. Agency for International Development. With a multinational approach underway, health officials hope it will limit the spread of the deadly disease. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Up to 245,000 Zimbabweans living in South Africa who were granted four-year amnesty permits that are set to expire at the end of this year have been given a three-year lifeline by the South African government. As Thuso Kumalo reports for VOA from Johannesburg, this comes as a big relief to these Zimbabweans who fear the loss of their permits would mean the loss of their jobs and returning to a life of poverty in their homeland.
In 2010, South Africa granted four-year residence permits to nearly a quarter million Zimbabweans who had entered the country illegally. However, many of the Zimbabweans who ran away from political and economic turmoil in their homeland have been living in fear as their permits were due to expire by the end of this year. But the announcement by the South African government on Tuesday brought relief to these Zimbabweans. Minister of Home Affairs Malusi Gigaba said that when the 2010 permits, known as DZP, expire at the end of this year, a new three-year Zimbabwean Special Dispensation Permit, ZSP, will kick in.
DZP permit holders who wish to remain in South Africa after the expiry of their permits can reapply for the ZSP. The ZSP will allow permit holders to live, work, conduct business, and study in South Africa until 31 December 2017.
However, the offer comes with conditions attached. Only holders of DZP will be allowed to apply for the ZSP permits. Applicants will be required to provide a valid passport, proof of employment, study, business ownership, and a clean criminal record. Applicants have been given 3 months to submit their application starting October 1. Applications will be accepted at newly opened visa centers throughout the country. The minister added that the ZSP will be the last special permits given to the Zimbabweans.
ZSP permit holders who wish to stay in South Africa after the expiry of the ZSP must return to Zimbabwe to apply for mainstream visas and permits under the Immigration Act. This means we will not be announcing in 2017 any new special permit.
The news of the new special permits has brought joy to the entire Zimbabwean community in South Africa. Solomon Chikoero, chairman of a Zimbabwean diaspora group, says Zimbabweans could not have gotten a better deal than this.
At least they have a breathing space for the next 3 years to put their papers in place, because there is also a leeway to move from the ZPC, because it's a special permit, to a proper permit which can allow you to apply either for certification or permanent resident thereafter.
An estimated 1.5 million Zimbabweans are believed to be living in South Africa as a result of economic and political turmoil in their homeland in the past 2 decades. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clote in Washington. Today is Wednesday. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Ahead on our program, Mark Omer's Sport and our Listener of the Day. South Sudan has abundant water resources with the potential to generate hydroelectric power and enhance agricultural production, but it will not be tapping into those resources anytime soon due to the ongoing conflict. An environmental expert says if South Sudanese leaders would end the war and concentrate instead on investing in the nation's water resources, the government could significantly improve the lives of ordinary citizens. For VOA News, Philip Thorne Aliu has the story from Entebbe, Uganda.
Abdullah Karim Hussein Said, head of Water Resources Management at Nile Basin Initiative, says despite the country's significant water resources, South Sudan only reaps short-term benefits from the Nile waters.
It has relatively significant water resource potential. If you take the Sud, it has a very big environmental asset. With endemic fish, endemic birds, and from environmental perspective, it has huge potential. At the same time, it is a source of livelihood for the local community there, and not only water, but also fishing, agriculture. And it has also on the eastern side, you have the Sobat River, and on the western side, you have the Bahr al-Ghazal, and also navigation potentials as well.
Hussein says these water resources could be exploited if it weren't for the ongoing conflict, not to mention the decades of war that preceded South Sudan's independence, which hampered any kind of development in the region for years. Hussein says one of the first things the government must do is develop the country's infrastructure, including roads and bridges, that will connect town to water resources. He says the government must also collect data on its water resources in order to fast-track the work of potential investors.
River gauging networks, climatic networks, they are not in good shape. Still, I know I have some, I've been traveling to South Sudan now since about a year and a half or 2 years, And I always discuss with colleagues from the Ministry of Electricity, Dams and Water, and there's a lot of effort to develop plans for development, like the Irrigation Master Plan, for example.
South Sudan is one of the 11 Nile Basin countries, meaning countries connected by the River Nile. Hussein says the Nile Basin Initiative, a project intended to ensure proper management of water resources in the region, is funding a riverbank monitoring network in South Sudan. He says it is imperative that the government inject more money into the initiative. He says few South Sudanese have sufficient access to clean water and electricity, and millions of them are put insecure. That could change, Hussein says, if the government focuses on its water resources.
The indicators show you there's huge, you know, demand for development. I don't have, you know, any factual data on how much investment is being made in South Sudan, but qualitatively speaking, I know there's a lot of effort being done, and which has to be strengthened and accelerated. I believe South Sudan has quite a lot of potential not yet tapped, quite a lot of water resources not yet tapped, which can be used for the benefit of its people.
The government says it has no data on its water resources at this time.
The Zimbabwe Defense Force marked its 34th anniversary today, with President Robert Mugabe praising it for maintaining peace in the country, as well as taking part in regional and international peacekeeping missions. Erwin Chefera reports from Harare.
Mr. Mugabe told thousands who thronged the National Sports Stadium to mark the day that the Zimbabwe Defense Force's commitment to national security was second to none. He said, apart from their security duties, the forces were also transforming people's lives through community services, such as constructing schools and providing food aid through programs like Operation Maguta.
The Zimbabwe Defense Forces have faced some challenges, largely induced by the heinous illegal sanctions imposed by the European Union and the United States of America. Despite the sanctions, the Zimbabwe Defense Forces have remained resolute in guaranteeing the defense and security of our country.
He said the Defense Forces enjoy cordial relations with their regional counterparts and are currently involved in the setting up of the Southern African Development Community and African Union Standby or Rapid Response Forces.
The Zimbabwe Defense Forces continue to make significant contributions towards the development of the SADC and African Union standby forces. Our defense forces have participated in regional exercises as part of the build-up and operationalization of the standby force.
Zimbabwean soldiers have served in regional campaigns in Mozambique and the Democratic Republic of Congo, and have also done and continue to do peacekeeping duties under the United Nations in countries like South Sudan and Nepal. To date, the Zimbabwe Defense Forces has deployed more than 5,000 soldiers to various countries on UN peacekeeping missions. President Mugabe used the occasion to honor 21 Liberation War heroes with Liberation and Independence Medals. The 21, who include John Makwasha, Pilot Duwe, Shadrick Chipanga, Irene Maesera Duwe, and Florence Miti, were pioneers of the armed wings of the liberation struggle.
I feel to be very much honored by His Excellency President to give me this special honor to be given the medals of the great works I did with my colleagues.
Several other officers were honored for their heroic exploits in the Democratic Republic of Congo War, which was known as Operation Sovereign Legitimacy in the later 90s. Zimbabwe commemorates Defense Forces Days the second week of August. This year, the commemorations were held under the theme Tracing the Genesis of the Zimbabwe Defense Forces. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here's Mark Ouma reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Peter. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the Africa Senior Athletics Championships in Marrakech, Morocco. Botswana's Nigel Amos clinched a gold medal as Ethiopian Mohamed Aman was second and Algerian defending champion Taufik Makloufi were placed third in men's 800 meters on Tuesday. Isaac Makwala handed Botswana their second gold medal with a championship record of 44.23 seconds in 400 meters. South African Wade van Niekerk was runner-up ahead of Kenyan Boniface Mucheru. Nigerian Folashade Abugan won the women's 400 meters in 51.21 seconds with Zambian Kabanga Mupopo second and Nigerian Patience Okon placed third. South African Cornel Fredericks clocked 48.78 seconds to triumph in men's 400 meter hurdles and was followed by Nigerian Amechi Morton and Kenyan Nicholas Bett. Staying in Marrakech, Zach Fisser leaped to a distance of 8.08 meters to lead Kotso Mokwena and Rachel Samai in ensuring a South African 1-2-3 clean sweep of the medal podium in men's long jump. In men's discus, defending champion Victor Hogan and Russell Tucker secured a 1-2 South African triumph with Nigerian Stephen Mosey claiming the bronze medal. Algerian Larbi Bourada amassed 8,311 points to comfortably win the energy-sapping decathlon with Guliaume Thierry of Mauritius claiming the silver medal ahead of Ghana's Atsu Nyamadi. In women's 5,000 meters, Almaz Ayana and Genzebe Dibaba managed a 1-2 Ethiopian triumph with Kenyan Janet Kisa taking the bronze medal, while Tunisian defending champions Srin Balti and Dora Makfoudi bagged the gold and bronze medals in women's pole vault as Moroccan Nisrin Dimar claimed the silver medal. Turning to football, Tanzania mainland's Azam and South Sudan's Atlabara drew 2-2 as Zanzibar's KMKM and Ethiopia's Adama also drew 1-1 at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's Sekafa Kagame Club Championships in Kigali, Rwanda on Tuesday. Today, Wednesday, Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority play Burundi's Atletico as Rwanda's military side APR engage Djibouti's Telkom. Finally, Nigeria play England in their final Group C tie at the FIFA Women's Under 20 World Cup in Edmonton, Canada, today, Wednesday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, Peter, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And here is listener mail for this Wednesday.
Good morning. This is William Koklo from Monrovia, Liberia. I believe traditional practices and the issue of denial is a serious challenge in the fight against Ebola in Liberia. Let me say this morning that Ebola is real, Ebola kills, and I call all Liberians to take the protective measures in fighting Ebola. Kick Ebola out of Liberia, kick Ebola out of West Africa. Thank you. May God bless Africa.
Thank you, listener, for your comment. Please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. And before we leave you, let's take a look at other Africa headlines. Human Rights Watch says Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi should be investigated for possible human rights violations in connection with the killing of hundreds of protesters last year in Cairo. In a new report Tuesday, the group outlines the conclusions of a year-long investigation into 6 weeks of violent crackdowns on protesters who were rallying against the ouster of former leader Mohamed Morsi. More than 1,000 people were killed in what Human Rights Watch called an unprecedented scale of protester deaths in Egypt as the country's police and security forces systematically and intentionally used excessive force. That's it for this Wednesday edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, managing editor William Eagle, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma, and Peter Clotte in Washington, wish you all have a peaceful Wednesday.
VOA.
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.
VOA podcasts are a convenient way to get your information on the run.
VOAAfrica.com.
Visit VOAAfrica.com and subscribe to our podcast service.